Today's episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast is brought to you by Skillshare. To get 2 months of Skillshare for just 99 cents, visit skillshare.com/creative. Hey everyone, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I'm the founder of Accidental Creative and the author of several books, including The Accidental Creative, Die Empty, Louder Than Words, and the new book, Herding Tigers, which is about how to create an environment in which creative teams thrive. And here on the show, we talk about you and your creative process, how to lead more effectively, how to collaborate more effectively, and how to do the best work of your life. On today's show, we're going to be talking to Wes Kao. Wes is a marketing consultant with over 10 years of in-house experience at Fortune 500 brands. Most recently, she was the executive director of Seth Godin's Alt MBA program, which she grew from zero to 550 cities in 45 countries in 3 years of extremely high growth. And so we're going to be talking to Wes about creativity, about leadership, about making maps versus following maps, and much, much more, especially relevant to those of us who are in potentially in a season of career transition. A lot of great stuff for us to think about on today's show. Before we jump into that, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Skillshare. So we talk a lot on the show about the importance of skill development, of keeping yourself sharp, and not just keeping yourself sharp, but continuing to grow your ability to bring value to your organization. But skill development isn't just about your career. It's also about personal satisfaction, personal growth, and making sure that you're not leaving your best work inside of you every day, but you're doing everything you can to position yourself to live life to the fullest. Well, Skillshare is your partner in doing that. It's an online learning platform with over 20,000 classes in business, marketing, technology, design, and more. You can take classes in social media marketing, data science, web development. If you can name it, then Skillshare probably has a class to help you develop that skill. So whether you're trying to deepen your professional skill set, you want to start a side hustle, or if you just want to explore a new passion, Skillshare is there to keep you learning and thriving. One of the things I love about being a Skillshare subscriber is that every week I get an email with recommendations, personalized recommendations for classes they think I might like. So for example, this week my recommended classes are Freelancing for Creatives, Strategies and Resources from First Leap to Finances by Margot Harrington, Entrepreneurship Hustle from Business Plan to Real World Success, Real Productivity, Create Your Ideal Week, Demystifying Graphic Design, How Posters Work, Watch Me Work, Real Client Design Projects. So you can learn real world skills on Skillshare to help you develop and grow. And even if you've been doing this for a while, there are things you're going to learn that maybe you never thought of before that will transform the way you approach your work. So join the millions of students already learning on Skillshare today with a special offer just for listeners of The Accidental Creative. Get 2 months of Skillshare for just 99 cents. That's 2 months of Skillshare for just 99 cents. Unlimited access to over 20,000 classes. To sign up, all you have to do is go to skillshare.com/creative. That's skillshare.com/creative to start your 2 months now. Again, that's skillshare.com/creative. And thanks Skillshare for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Well, it is a joy to have on the show today, Wes Kao. Wes, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast.
Hey, Todd. It's great to be here.
So I'm going to begin our conversation by asking a question that my friend Andrew Peters put me on the spot with not long ago. And, you know, feel free to punt or to take a few minutes if you need to think about it. But what is the most important thing that we need to know about Wes Kao?
Ooh, Todd, you're starting heavy. Let's see. The most important thing. I think the most important thing to know about me is that a lot of what now comes naturally to me in terms of marketing, in terms of connecting with people, with thinking more deeply about, okay, why would someone care about a certain idea? A lot of my work involves and really centers on being able to understand people and what would motivate them to take action. But that really did not always come easily to me. And it was really a skill that I had to learn to work at, because for many years I thought, you know, hey, if I keep my head down and I work hard, my work is going to speak for itself. The best ideas, you know, the best products will naturally rise to the top. And that really just does not happen. And so a lot of what I teach now is that the best product doesn't win, doesn't always win. The best idea doesn't always win. The best person doesn't always win. And, you know, once we acknowledge that, we as creators can really take responsibility for connecting the dots from, you know, our idea or our product, our innovation, and bridge to our audiences, our customers, our coworkers about, hey, why would they care about this? Why does this matter? And I think it was this shift and accepting that personal responsibility that we really have to connect the dots for people. That was a revelation for me. And I know that it's frustrating for a lot of people who do creative work that people don't understand them or don't understand their ideas. But I wanted, I want people to know that, you know, it wasn't easy for me either, but it's definitely a skill that you can learn and build and practice.
That is absolutely one of the, it's almost, there's almost like a rite of passage, I think, for a lot of young creative pros where they realize, just because my idea is the best idea doesn't mean that idea is going to be implemented, or just because my idea is the best idea doesn't mean that other people are going to understand it. And it is, and I think people go one of two directions at that point when they hit that crossroads. They either think, oh, well, everybody is stupid and I'm the only smart one in the room, or they realize, oh, it is my responsibility to figure out a way to get this idea into the world in a way it can be received. And the people who figure that out quickly are tend to be the people who make more impact and have a little bit easier career trajectory, because you have to realize, listen, just because you see the world a certain way doesn't mean everybody sees the world that way. I mean, you're certainly biased by your perspective and your experience. And so what are some ways that you learned in your career? And obviously you have a substantial career in brand management and marketing. And I mean, you've worked with some extremely high profile clients and projects. What are some things that you have learned about how to translate your ideas so that they are more receivable, if that's even a word, by others in your organization or in the marketplace?
That's a great question. There's a big difference between having an insight and having an assertion about what action should we take because of this insight. So I'll tell a quick story. Early in my career, I worked with some of the smartest people at the Gap headquarters in San Francisco. And I was super excited to be there. I was bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. And after work, I would put together trend boards. So I would put together, you know, magazine cutouts, and I'd bring it to the senior leaders, and I'd say stuff like, legging sales have been going up a lot, and you know, or fringe. We're seeing a lot of high-end designers using fringe. We're seeing that as a trend. Or I'd say stuff like, okay, a lot of brands are offering activewear. And I would do this, and I would pat myself on the back when I pointed out these insights, and I expected everyone else to pat me on the back too. And that really was not the case. And one day, one of the senior merchants, my boss's boss, was this brilliant woman named Susie. And I went into her office, brought one of these trend boards, and she really stopped me. And she said, okay, Wes, this is great, but what is the next step? What should we do? What are you suggesting? What action should we really take? And I realized that I didn't have a good answer for that. And it was super frustrating because I thought, hey, I had done my part. I brought you these insights. I thought this is what you wanted. And, you know, these are my great ideas. But I didn't understand that until years later that Susie was really trying to help me see that an insight is not the same thing as a suggestion or an assertion for taking action. And an insight really alone isn't enough. So I think this you know, example really encompasses that, you know, a lot of people think they have great ideas and they think they're doing what their boss has said to do by bringing up these ideas. But there's a big difference between pointing out something versus going the extra steps to say, okay, I've thought deeper about how this would work and how this would impact our business, and here are the actions that we should take. And I'm willing to go out on a limb, put myself on the line, and commit to taking responsibility for how I would bring this about into the real world. I've thought about the things that could go wrong. Here's how I'm going to mitigate those. And here's a small, easy way that we can test this hypothesis. that's just so different than, you know, bringing a trend board to someone and saying, hey, fringe is really in this year.
Right, right. Well, and that communicates value to the people that you report to and to the people on your team as well. When you say not only, hey, I have an insight, look how smart I am, but I have an insight and here's what we need to do about it. Here are the next steps. I've actually gone the extra mile to figure out what are the next things we need to do in order to test this or in order to sort of push this out in a way that we can actually see if it's valid or not. Because we're all making assumptions, right, about what's valid and what's not. And an insight sometimes is based on a set of assumptions that may not prove valid once you begin to implement it.
Exactly. And a lot of times an insight is pointing something out that you think is is interesting or different or unexpected. But it doesn't really go the extra step to say, you know, is this a good thing or is this a bad thing? Do you want to incorporate it into a certain part of our business? And I actually divide this into three parts. So insights versus suggestions versus assertions. And if you think of a spectrum of how much am I personally putting myself on the line and having skin in the game with wanting to advocate for a certain path, insights would be on the far left where, hey, I'm pointing out something, for example, this coffee cup is black. Okay. It's a to-go coffee cup. That's it. It's black. Okay, cool. Now moving further right to the middle is a suggestion. So maybe it's saying, hey, there are a lot of coffee shops in the area, all the to-go cups are black. So what if we made ours yellow? Because that's really going to stand out. And there's going to be people walking around, you know, a 5-block radius who are going to associate that with our, you know, our storefront and logo color, et cetera. So, I suggest that we do a brighter color. And then on the far right, the very far right extreme, which is where I think more people should be and should go, is to come up with an assertion and to actually advocate for a point of view. And so that's saying, okay, of all the bright colors, I think we should do yellow because that's our, you know, that's our logo color. And I've thought about, and I've taken a step to look into the printing costs, and our supplier says it's actually the same cost to print yellow versus black. We can do a limited run of 500 cups, test out how it goes. And if it doesn't work, we'll go back to black. People have pretty short memories, so no one's going to say, okay, we've damaged our brand, but it's essentially going that extra step to say, you know, I thought about how this is going to work and I'm willing to speak with conviction and advocate for a path as opposed to just suggesting. You know, suggesting is like me saying, hey, Todd, I'm putting a couple options out for you. You have to pick. And the implicit agreement, the unspoken social contract, is that you, Todd, because you picked, if things go wrong, I'm not at fault. You're at fault. You're ultimately right because you picked. But when you're advocating for a point of view, you're the one that says, hey, I, Wes, am saying we should try the yellow cups. And Todd, if this doesn't work, it's on me. I'm going to fix it. And I've thought about how this would work.
Which is why a lot of people don't make suggestions, right, in that way, or offer next step ideas. A lot of times it's because they don't want the accountability of what if things go off the rails, right? What if this isn't right? What if it doesn't work? I know that you spent a lot of time working with Seth Godin. That's one of his favorite questions. What if this doesn't work, right? This might not work. But we spend a lot of time trying to avoid that accountability in organizations because we don't like the optics of a failure. But you talk a lot about, and I think this gets to this subject that you often like to address, which is the difference between map following and map making. You know, map following is about avoiding accountability. You know, you just follow the map and, hey, I didn't make the map. I'm just following the map, right? I'm not accountable for which direction we go. I mean, the map is telling me which way to go. Versus map making, which is, you know, obviously when you make a map, when you're sort of exploring new territory, you're accountable for all of those following you. So how should we think about this difference, Wes, between map making and map following?
That's a great question. There's definitely a huge difference between drawing your own roadmap and following a roadmap. So the differences I'll explain briefly. So one, you know, when you're drawing a roadmap, you're usually doing something that hasn't been done before. There's usually a lot of ambiguity, uncertainty. There's, you know, a dozen ways that something could work or not work. And you're building for the future and creating something new. When you're following a roadmap, there's usually a precedent of some sort. So we've done it this way for a while. We're going to continue doing it this way. There's historical data and evidence of how it's worked in the past. So it feels a lot safer because you know how it's turned out in the past. And it's usually a lot more about rules and guidelines and fixing problems as opposed to building something new in an area that hasn't really been done before. And I think as we move forward in our careers, both on an individual level, you're going to have to more and more learn the skill of drawing a roadmap, because people are turning to you as a creative leader to guide them into the path for, hey, what are we doing? You know, the environment around us is changing, the market around us is changing, or we as a company are changing. So how are we going to react? How are we going to proactively plan? And a lot of this is in that drawing the roadmap category. So I think as we advance in our careers, that's going to be a skill set that's more and more important. And then the second thing is that, you know, as AI becomes more prevalent and a lot of people are talking about the future of work and are we going to be replaced by robots and machines and algorithms, the thing that's going to be harder to replace is building something new and drawing a roadmap. And if you're doing something that can be codified, that can be documented into a process and repeated over and over, there's a robot out there who can do it faster, better, and more accurately than you can. So when we think about it on a macro level, it really is a good investment to think about, okay, you know, if a lot of my skill set is rooted in following a roadmap, how do I develop that skill to be better at drawing a roadmap and thinking about creating order from chaos in a way where the people around me trust me and feel safe and want to move forward together?
Right. And I think that phrase order from chaos is so important. I mean, that's a great way of describing it, because that is what human beings are uniquely capable of doing, you know. And like you said, if you're doing any kind of work that is repeatable and able to be turned into a process, and some people think, oh, well, I make art, you know, I design or I write. So clearly never will an algorithm overtake my role. You know, it's like, well, I don't know. In the next 5 to 10 years, I think we're going to see algorithms doing things we never imagined possible, even mimicking human creativity in ways that we never thought possible. And so, you know, I think that the one thing that we can do is to turn chaos into meaning. And again, that's about more than just having insights. It's about acting on those insights and providing some sort of human touch point to those insights so that we can, you know, make sure that we're not becoming obsolete and not just sort of, you know, doing the, you know, wash, rinse, or, you know, lather, rinse, repeat in our career. I mean, that if you find yourself in that position, then you're probably already heading down a dangerous path.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And it's really just a lot easier to find people who can follow directions and follow a roadmap than it is to find people who can draw a roadmap. So when you think about value in terms of scarcity, it's just a lot more scarce to have people who are able to turn chaos into something that's understandable and contextualized for the people around them. So it's a good skill to invest in.
Yeah. And if you find, I think for those listening, and I know this is challenging to me right now as well, one of the insights I'm taking away from this is, where are the places where I've just kind of settled in and I'm just doing things that I've always assumed will always be the way that they have been. And they're just always going to be that way. And where am I following maps instead of making maps. I think that that's sort of a personally convicting thing. So thank you for for that insight. So one more thing I want to talk about. I was exploring your website, and one of the one of the little sections of your website is just "Want to Nerd Out," and one of them is ask me about what a spiky point of view is. So I'm curious, what is a spiky point of view?
A spiky point of view is something that stands out and has a real assertion behind it. So going back to what we were saying about the differences between an insight and an assertion, a spiky point of view is something that has a thesis that people can disagree with. And I think that, you know, a lot of times we want to prioritize people liking us. And so we'll kind of round out the edges of ideas that started off originally as pretty bold, spiky ideas. And then gradually we make them smaller and smoother and rounder. And there's not that edge anymore. There's not that, that sharpness that could, you know, end up upsetting some people, or people could disagree, or it could be controversial. So a spiky point of view is really something where you say, hey, I believe really strongly in this. And you know, someone could push back and say, Wes, I think that's baloney, and I absolutely think the opposite, and here's why. But it ends up really creating opportunities for conversations to happen and for people to have something to go off of. It's, you know, it kind of goes back again to the insights and assertions, because when you just point something out, you know, the sky is blue. Okay, no one, there's nothing really to talk about there. But if you assert something and you give it your own unique take and your opinion and your spin on it, there's something that people can work with, whether it's I agree or I disagree, but it moves the conversation forward as opposed to just standing still.
Right. Yeah. I often, when I work with leaders, I'll tell them, listen, the parts of you, especially young leaders, people who are just stepping into leadership roles, listen, the parts of you that maybe offend people, not offend them in a, you know, like you need better social practices kind of way, but in a, like, you know, I disagree with your point of view, or you're a little bit too abrasive in how you think about what we do or whatever it is. Those are the parts of you that are most valuable to the organization, because those are the parts that are going to provoke critical conversations, that are going to challenge the process, that are going to do things that maybe haven't been done in your organization for a while. I like to tell the story of Jimi Hendrix opening for the Monkees, because Jimi Hendrix spent about 2 weeks opening for the Monkees in July of 1967. He was booed off stage every single night because Monkees fans had no clue how to interact with Jimi Hendrix's music, of course, because the Monkees are, you know, the height of pop music sort of predictability and blandness, and Jimi Hendrix was like playing with his teeth, or you know, like doing crazy stuff. And because of that, you know, it would have been really tempting for him to just sort of make his music more palatable to Monkees fans, make himself a little more sort of pop and acceptable. But instead, you know, he was willing to be booed off stage every night. And I think, you know, for leaders especially, it's important that we embrace our rough edges, and that we embrace, like you said, those spiky points of view that we have that might provoke conflict, because conflict in that sense is really good. That conflict is productive conflict, not destructive conflict, because it's going to sharpen everyone's point of view.
Absolutely. And I think a lot about turning bugs into features too, personally. So if there's something about you or about your work or about your point of view that you feel a little bit ashamed of, or you feel like, oh man, I wish I were more like everyone else in this way, I would really challenge you to think about, how can you turn that into a feature? So for example, if you're a little bit, you know, if you're more introverted, or you like more intimate settings or smaller groups, and you feel like, you know, whatever your profession, people are usually more extroverted, more outgoing, more social, you could, you know, instead of trying to hide it or trying to be more extroverted, you know, in which case, A, you'll never be as, you know, naturally social as people who really love being with people. And B, it might just feel awkward and strained. You know, instead of that, what if you could turn your introvertedness into a feature and try to find people who like, you know, real estate agents who are introverted, or designers who are introverted, or, you know, whatever your profession might be. But basically turning that downside into something that might attract a smaller group of people, but is going to be the right group of people who appreciate something about you that comes really naturally to you. So I have a lot of clients that, you know, that try to change certain things about themselves or try to downplay something. And we'll always do the thought exercise of saying, okay, what if instead of downplaying this, you actually played this up and amplified it by 10x?
And then see what happens.
Yeah, and see what happens.
Yeah, I love that. That's fantastic advice. And I think, you know, sometimes the best parts of us are the parts that we personally dislike. The most effective parts are the parts we, you know. So I love that. Wes, what's the best way for people to get a hold of you if they want to learn more about your work?
You can find me on my website at weskao.com. My email's there, my Twitter's there, so feel free to reach out. I also write a blog about twice a week, so definitely subscribe and we can keep in touch that way too.
Fantastic. Well, Wes, thanks so much for taking the time to share your insights with us.
Thanks so much, Todd. It's great being here.
And of course, as always, thank you for listening. If you'd like every episode delivered as it's released, visit accidentalcreative.com/subscribe or just subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.